Hello, I'm Cynthia. Definitely adulterated about alcoholics. And at the present moment, filled with self-doubt and fear. I've been thinking about my life the last 3 or 4 days, wondering, you know, kind of reviewing things. And 45 minutes seems like an interminable time. And I'm not sure that I will be able to talk that long, and if I don't, we'll just do some sharing. So I don't think I've ever felt like I had less recovery to share. I have been this whole year at the bottom of my codependency. I hope it's the bottom. I pray that it is the bottom. I let go of a long marriage a year ago, and I stayed in it for as long as I could in order to not feel what I felt all year long, and especially over the holidays. I've been feeling so much pain and so much longing to somehow manipulate him back into my life, and, you know, just putting signs on the phone for pain, call him. And it's just been a long time coming, and I think so many of us in ACA are codependent and have. And what is the definition of codependency that I like the best is when you use a relationship to medicate feelings rather than knowing whether you are truly in love or not, whether you truly know who that person is or not. You know, my whole life, it didn't even matter. If you could... You know, if I could be, if you had enough problems so that I could take care of them, then I wouldn't have to feel my own problems, and you would do. And so I ended this relationship. I mean, I had plenty of reasons. Of course, we always have reasons. But mainly so that I could feel these feelings, so that I could truly face what it was to be with myself, and it's been very difficult. I have to say that I have I've eaten more sugar than I think I have since I was a teenager this Christmas, and I have binge watched Netflix until I, you know, was buzzing. I think that's about it, but mainly those things. And I'm not proud of it. You know, I was not my own loving parent. And what going to these meetings do is remind me that there are other options, you know, to being one's own loving parent. I teach Qigong. I could teach Qigong. You know, I could write. I have many projects to write. There are so many things I could have done that would have been useful. And I wish I had chosen them, and perhaps now, facing them or thinking about them, I will. I didn't get this crazy all by myself. I certainly had a long family history of codependency. My parents met on a trail in Yosemite to Bridal Veil Falls, and my father said that he was 37 years old. He wasn't married and never had children. Well, 2 years later, when she found out that he was 47, had 3 children, and was living at home, instead of saying, you know, get out of here, she made him get a divorce and marry her. I mean, and that's what happened. And I always wondered why we never had friends over or a lot of family. Nobody approved of this marriage. And my father was a concert pianist and very charming, and just got away with murder. And people loved his vibrant personality. And he was a raging alcoholic and rager in the home. And I was always, he was so unpredictable. So unpredictable. I remember one holiday driving with him to get something that we'd forgotten at the store. And he had run a stop sign and the police caught us. And he raged at the police and I was screaming at him to please stop because they kept threatening to take him to jail if he wouldn't shut up. And that was kind of my father. Nothing could stop him. He was out of control so much of the time. And my mother was just scared to death. And did a lot of crying in the bedroom. And neither one of them really had time to give me much attention because they were so embroiled in their own relationship. And my father had a lot of affairs, and my mother always was crying about them, and they—and that was their relationship. I only got divorced when I was 11, and they both had met multiple people in their lives, and. So I was raised in a way that wasn't stable. I was an only child, and I never quite knew how to get attention. You had to be something pretty wonderful to get attention in my family, or do something so horrible that they were ashamed and scared. And I ended up getting pregnant when I was 16, and that did it. That got a lot of attention, and they made me drink a bottle of gin to try to abort the pregnancy, and I got alcohol poisoning and almost died, but I still had that baby, and so I was taken to Tijuana and given an abortion the real way. And then they put me in a foster home 80 miles away to get me away from that boy. And I something happened during that time that just shut me down to my own feelings, to my own humanity, to hope, to I remember feeling like so hard. There was a time when it was okay during the day, but at night, you know, in bed at night, the feelings, they would start coming, and in the foster home, and I would sneak out of bed and walk up and down the stairs and up and down the stairs. And I remember these feelings growing so large in me. I thought that I needed to scream, but I didn't dare scream. And I felt like something shattered in me. Something really shattered. And it felt like I was just in so many pieces. I didn't know what to do with myself. I went off to college. I tried to just keep going in my life. But the codependency, after drinking that gin, you'd think that I would never drink gin or drink again. I got so ill, but I just never drank gin again. Everything else was great, and I was everything that you would think would, you know, be pretty clear about, okay, you're going to do this, like go to college. Well, it always seemed to go wrong. I remember I was getting married to a man I didn't love, but he cried when I said no. And I didn't know how to say no, or how to hurt somebody's feelings, so we got married. And my parents were so upset that we had a lookout for my father, who was threatening to kill my soon-to-be husband. And the best man was wanted by the police for being an SDS and blowing up a car. And it was just like the strangest wedding. Oh, and I was having a miscarriage walking down the aisle. And I mean, it was like everything was like, you could not get crazier in the, you know, and it was the 60s, you know, it was kind of that time. But there I was married, and 2 years later, I didn't have that child, but 2 years later, oh, and my drinking and drug taking had just completely grown. Just, I couldn't go a day without drinking. And I ended up having a child, and I loved that baby so much. I realized I had never been in love until that. I saw that child. He was, and something started to break through. And I remember stopping drinking for quite a while, at least as long as he was just a baby. But then I started drinking again. I couldn't, the addiction started again. And I drove with him in the blackout, and I realized I could have killed him. And so I left him with his father. And nothing could have made me wake up more than losing that child. You know, it was like every waking moment, I was filled with pain. Like when your skin aches, you know, when your whole body aches and your mind is just fixated on something's wrong. And nothing could have gotten me besides losing my child. And that was my wake-up call. And I started from that time. My son, last year, he said, one of the things I could never forgive myself for was not being able to save you. And I said, you did. He did save me. Because nothing could have found me like losing him. And that pain found me. I couldn't drink it away. I couldn't smoke it away. I couldn't do enough coke. I couldn't do enough relationships. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do anything to make the pain go away. And it was the beginning. Was just the beginning of finding myself. I ran into a character named Ram Dass when I was 22. I don't know if any of you know Ram Dass. He was he brought acid to America with Timothy Leary. And I ran into him when he came back from India and had met a guru. And I heard him talk. I was living in Cambridge at the time. And I heard him talk, and he talked about the miracles, and he talked about spirituality, and this other place. It was like he talked about like absolute reality, is what I would know it to be now. But what I didn't know is that he was still probably doing as many drugs as I was, you know? And he didn't have any real... it took him a long time to grow into what he was preaching at the time. But it woke something up in me to want to explore spirituality. And I've done that. I've chanted Hare Krishna till I was blue in the face, and you know, I've gone to 10-day meditation retreats, silent retreats, meditating 11 hours a day. And one of the things that happened during the meditation retreat was that it starts house cleaning. What meditation does is it starts house cleaning, and all of the feelings that you've been avoiding come up. So for a long time I meditated and drank and meditated and drank. But finally, when I did finally get to AA when I was 33, and really I couldn't meditate and drink anymore, and so I kind of stopped. And I really feel that 12 steps are the perfect spiritual path for the Western mind. That all of those Indian gurus and Japanese people and Zen, all of them are perfect for a society that doesn't have the neurosis we do. And that we really need to work on our psychological self before we can sit. You know, before, and we've got to undo this stuff or we'll just kill ourselves, that's all. You know, sitting with all that pain, who wants to do that? And it took a lot of... Could I get some water?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. It took maybe 20 years of 12-step meetings before I could truly sit and meditate. It was still painful, but I could bear being with myself. Thanks, right now.
You're welcome.
I came to... So all of the mantra chanting, praying. Oh, I even joined an order. I went into a Christian order for a while. It didn't work either. I would get drunk on communion wine. You know? And after a year, I left with a man who came to the back door delivering fish. I couldn't stick to anything. And it wasn't like I planned it, you know? It was like there were two parts of my nature that I could not, they didn't talk to each other. I mean, I was so split in all those pieces. Remember falling into all those pieces at the foster home? I had all these parts of myself that never spoke together. They weren't one person. They were like, okay, you take care of the needs of this person. You do drugs, you drink, you find a man, you find a new house, you know, I can't stop looking for rent signs. And then there's this other person that knows I should be meditating, and then there's, okay, you know, it was like all these different pieces. So when I finally got to AA, it was, it was like a miracle to find AA. I didn't come because I drank a little bit too much. I drank because I was you know, I had was seeing rats. You know, I was living in Santa Barbara, and I was doing body work. I was a massage therapist, and I went to a party where all of my healing friends were, and while everybody was in the hot tub, I went around and drank every bit of alcohol that was in the whole house. And people came back in, where's my beer, where's my vodka, where's my gasoline? It was in me, you know, it was in me, and I wasn't drunk. And that was the last time I drank, which was in 1980. And I had, and that's when I started bringing the pieces back together again. I was in AA for 5 years when somebody said, you know, you might try ACA. I think it was a fairly new program. It was in 1988. I think it was fairly new then. Mm-hmm. And I was living in LA at the time, and there was, it was in a great big church in Westwood on a Sunday evening, and I remember people talking about feelings and wondering, how in the world do they know what they're feeling? Mm-hmm. How in the world do you, I had no idea how to identify a feeling. I had a real hard time identifying the truth. Like, was it what I wanted you to know? Was it what I wanted to believe? I didn't quite get that it was with what happened. That sounds so ridiculous, but when you are so far dissociated, we'll say. I hate that word because it just... But when you are not in your body, when you have made a life of just being a certain way here, but you're really out here because you can't bear being in here. There is such a dichotomy in what you think and what you feel and how you're acting. And they don't come together. And this program started me with the inventory. It started me feeling like I had to get into the body in order to feel what I was feeling. I wanted to know if I was angry. I wanted to know what I liked. I wanted to know, you know, what happened. I was 5 years sober before I realized I remembered the abortion. Mm-hmm. I had so closed the door on it just once that I remember telling somebody who had asked me to be their sponsor, she said that she had had an abortion. And I said, oh, I had an abortion. The door opened. It wasn't like I found it, it was the door was closed. And the memories started coming. Well, I belonged to this group of people in ACA in LA, and we sort of started taming each other. We started, you know, inviting people over for coffee, or going out together, or giving birthday parties to each other. I could hardly say hello. After hello, it was hard. And I finished my train of thought. Where was I? Anyway, we started socializing each other, and we started doing the John Bradshaw tapes together. Mm-hmm. Have any of you done John Bradshaw? Mm-hmm. Or, mm-hmm. if you're not glued together pretty good, I do not, it's very difficult work. I went to a John Bradshaw workshop, and he led us on a meditation to meet the inner child. Mm. And I had a break. I had almost a psychotic break going back into the roots of my childhood. I couldn't stop crying. I was shaking. I got home and I couldn't figure out how the teapot, hot water, and a tea bag could all get into the same place. I could not figure out how that happened. I would see my dog needed a walk and start the bath. Nothing was coming together. And I couldn't drive. And I spent a year. People came and got me for meetings. They put me in the car and somebody would just hold me through the whole meeting. And another practice I had was writing, just writing, automatic writing an hour a day. And that started helping me find out what in the world I was thinking. And I started doing a writing class. And I studied with a wonderful writing teacher in LA and ended up writing about my body work. And anyway, in the ACA and the CODA meetings and AA, I started to, and the 12 steps, going through all these steps. You know, what I loved about ACA was that people were so much gentler here than me. I survived the first 5 years of AA, and it was good because I was hard too. But when I started to melt, when I had that breakdown, I needed soft people. I needed real gentle people, and I found that in ACA. And I just absolutely took to it. And with this wonderful group that had formed, it really started working for me. Remembering all of the memories coming back, the first few years were all about beating myself up about my son, about what I had done, you know, about the things that I wished I hadn't done. And then I became very curious about who was this person that was so far removed from their core, what they loved, what they needed to so far removed from what was in the best interest of me, so out of touch with what was in my best interest. And I became curious as to what happened. And that's what kept me going in this program through everything. There was absolutely no way out but through. There was, once you've started this process, you'd have to start drinking again, or you'd have to go you'd have to start doing something so alien to your best interest, or kill yourself, you know. But you can't stop. You just can't stop it. It needs to be unraveled. Once I started writing, I just couldn't stop. And I ended up writing a book. Once I started finding myself and bringing the pieces together, it was amazing. It was like finding the gold inside. Mm-hmm. you know, finding what was good in me. It was so overridden by leaving my son that I couldn't feel anything that was good. It was so full of shame. And when I started letting go of that and peeling the layers away, I started finding good things. And that has been such a blessing. We never know who we are. It's like such a journey to find out who God made, you know, who God made here. And I do a one-woman show based on my book that I've done all over the country. And I get such satisfaction in doing that. It's a memoir. And I know I never could have done it if it weren't for all of the people that have held me together. I feel that each one of you, and each time I go to a meeting, somebody brings a piece of me back. Until I feel pretty whole much of the time, and until I do something like get a divorce and and it's the holidays. But most of the time I'm a lot of, you know, even if I'm not feeling well, I'm functioning pretty well. I'm earning a living. I started Ubering 2 months ago. And I'm having more fun. I'm getting so many stories out there. I think another book is coming. And my son and I, he called me tonight and said, "Mom, you want to go to the movies?" And with my grandson, and I was able to spend Christmas with my son and grandson. And he's been the delight of my life. I am so grateful for this wonderful grandson. I wasn't a great mother, but I've been a good grandmother, you know, and so many gifts have come back into my life through being willing to unravel and put myself back together again. Whatever we think is the worst thing that happened, like that breakdown that I had, I realized that it was creating a clean slate so I could put myself back together in a way that worked. You know, during that time I met my higher power. I was writing that automatic writing and just writing, and I was demanding that God tell me what I was supposed to know in order to make the pain go away, and what I needed. And the next line that came out, it was, "You need to know that I have always loved you. I will always be here for you, and I will never leave you." Mm-hmm. And I looked at that line, and I said, "Who are you?" And the next line was, "You can call me Glenn." And I said, "Glenn, just think of me as a clearing in a dark woods." And I wrote to that being every day for years and years. I have volumes of journals filled with writings to Glenn. And there was a time when I would just bring the worst things that I'd done or the worst feelings, and somehow this being would find a way to find the good in it and to soothe me with, "You're doing the best you can. I'm proud of you. I love you." Well, it was that loving parent, wasn't it? I had come in contact with that loving parent that somehow I could access through writing. I couldn't think it, but I could access it through writing. And I wrote and wrote to that being. Glenn. So my higher power's name is Glenn. We get to have our own. Isn't that wonderful? You know, I follow so many religions, and I love that we can make up our own here. We can just make up whatever has happened to us. I've kind of, after I was maybe 10 years sober, I'm trying to fit myself into a convent, a order, a, you know, any kind of Buddhist thing, any Hindu thing. I've done it all. And I finally decided that I wouldn't believe what didn't happen to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I would have my own religion that worked for me. And for months I felt very empty and kind of scared. But I've grown more confident in having it. If it didn't happen, I won't believe it. I won't not believe it if it happened to you, but I'm not going to make something up to feel better. And it's helped me come back, bring some pieces together that make me present. That's kind of my religion, is presence. Being in this present moment, all of me being here. How am I doing? Did I?
You're perfect.
I think that's it. I think I have nothing more to say. Thank you so much.